The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Clapp for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Clapp. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Clapp.
I'm Stan Clapp, and I'm coming to you from around the world today. We have a visitor from Israel. We have two visitors from Johannesburg, actually three people from Johannesburg. So we'll start off with our visitor from Israel. That's Dr. Daniel Brody. As you know, he's the expert on Shabbos, and he's written a book to prove it, Learn Shabbos on 3 Minutes a Day. And we have Yochi Res, who's a clinical psychologist, and Dr. Natalie Solomon is also a clinical psychologist. We'll come to them a little bit later. We're going to talk today about the fact that you've been cooped up, you've got your kids with you, you're at home, you can't go to shul to daven, you have to daven at home, and you have to in all make a way to spend the next 2 weeks or so, and maybe even longer, we don't know at this stage, in trying to entertain your kids, trying to entertain yourself, make yourself comfortable with yourselves, and you're going to get some guidance from Yochi, from Natalie, and from Rabbi Brady. So, Rabbi, let's start off. You've got to be at home. You've got to daven at home. Shuls have been closed officially here, and so you can't go there. You've got to daven. What does one have to do?
Look, Stan, just to understand, there's two benefits usually of going to shul. The first is that a person davens, he prays with a minion, with a community. And so I heard, if we can say, a bit quicker than a individual. So that's one benefit. The second benefit is that one goes next in a shul has a certain extra sanctity, extra kedusha. Great. So
talk a little bit more. We're having the rabbi left. So we'll talk on. We were going because we want to come back to what you do, and we're trying to get the benefit. So Yochi Res and Dr. Natalie Solomon, you're at home with your kids. They're driving you nuts. What's the psychological way of dealing with that? I mean, I have some ideas of my own, but it involves locking them up in a room where you can't see them. I don't suppose that's actually the real answer.
Well, it certainly changes perspective around family time. I think Corona has introduced a whole new routine and reality to what family life looks like. And certainly learning to spend 24/7 together can be both challenging, but also an opportunity to get to know each other anew, and to really get to spend time together in a way that real life doesn't permit.
So Natalie Solomon is a clinical psychologist. She's worked in a remedial school and in private practice for 14 years. Her areas of interest include attachment, trauma, interpersonal neurobiology, learning difficulties, depression, and anxiety. I don't know whether she's got the depression and anxiety or she's dealing with psychotherapy and parent work, and she's also completely vague, if I'm not to do with how you deal with how you relate to others. And so I guess this is the true moment to discuss it.
Okay. Well, polyvagal is definitely a theory introduced by Stephen Porges, and he introduced this is based on evolutionary psychology. And what he talks about is that you have natural states of that to how we perceive experiences as either safe or unsafe. And that perceived experiences as unsafe, our body physiologia that it takes on at an unconscious level. It's not even a choice. So that when we experience something as frightening, our body will either automatically mobilize to take action, or it will feign death. So we'll, you know, roll over in self-protection, and that in those changes, our vision changes, our heart rate is different. And that it's quite what you're talking about. Automatically with think about our body response. And maybe Jochen can talk to it because he is very interested in mindfulness and talk about how we manage our thoughts as well.
Jochen Uess is a clinical psychologist. He's also a musician. He's an expert group facilitator, in particularly in leadership. He loves to deal with conflict and resolution, conflict resolution. But today we're going to talk about mindfulness. Now, and you've done all your work because in the office, it takes you a whole day to do your probably do 10.
This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
So we're back on air. I'm sorry that we're getting an echo, but hopefully that'll go away. The technical team is working on that, but from point of view of the show, we unfortunately have at the moment lost Rabbi Daniel Brady, but we're talking still to Jochi Res and Natalie Solomon, and we're discussing mindfulness, and Jochi is an expert on mindfulness, and while you're at home and you're trying to look after the family and talk with the kids and entertain them and so on, I guess it's important that all of us are mindful of each other and mindful of ourselves. So would you like to expand on that, Jochi?
Thanks, Dan, and thanks for the opportunity to be on the show and to share some thoughts and maybe some feelings even. I wanted to pick up on where Natalie left off before on the physiological response. I think that's a key aspect to focus on. I just wanted to start with almost a bit more of a human side. And by that, I guess I mean that my feelings at this time is that really, against any of our choice, we are all flung into this radical encounter with our vulnerability. And when we say vulnerability, we could actually really just replace that with our humanity, because actually what it means to be human is to be vulnerable. And there's an incredible talk by Brené Brown, this incredible woman on TED. It's one of the most often watched TED Talks. It's around 50 million views so far. Her talk is called The Power of Vulnerability. And it's an incredible insight and perspective and almost really a reframe. A reframe is a great tool and technique and term from cognitive psychology, where we really challenge a fundamental belief, which in this case is, as a society in the West, where we tend to think that to be vulnerable or to show vulnerability, often we're conditioned into seeing that as weakness. And she turns that on its head and she says, no, actually, our vulnerability is our greatest power. And it's our authenticity and being real with ourselves and being real with others. She puts it so beautifully, allowing ourselves to be seen. And I think that really, that is something that we can draw on in this time, because in a time where we are confronted with such uncertainty and feeling helpless in some ways or powerless, this is something to remember, that when we get in touch with our vulnerability, you know, this is something I think that on an individual and a collective level, no one is immune. Excuse the pun, but really, you know, this is something that we are all facing in a very radical way. And I think that this is important to remember, that we can really connect with our humanity. And in some ways, this is not a new thing. You know, we've always been vulnerable, but I think at this point in time, we're just so much more aware and conscious of our vulnerability. So I just wanted to start with that. You know, I was speaking with my brother on the phone earlier today, Rafi, and he helps head up the informal education division in the Herzliya school system. And he was saying to me, you know, he was being vulnerable and sharing with me how he teaches kids about faith and about, you know, how to be strong and connect with Hashem. And he's like, and now I'm also, you know, facing my own challenges of how to walk my talk, you know, because he was just tested and thank goodness he came back positive results. But in the clear, but he was saying that roller coaster that he went through was a real confrontation with his own vulnerability and humanity. And even as someone who teaches Jewish informal education and is so passionate and is an incredible human being, he was saying that, you know, he's connecting with his own challenges in faith, and it is sometimes up and down. And so I think this is a time where we really have to come, you know, I have a very close friend in Cape Town, an amazing larger-than-life woman, Barbara Nussbaum, and she said that she's calling on her eldership and her big-heartedness at this time. And I thought that was such an incredible statement. And I think that's the energy that we need. We need to call on our eldership. Eldership is wisdom, and it's not necessarily age-related. It is often, but not only. You have some young people that demonstrate remarkable eldership and wisdom. And the perspective of that with a big heart. So that's what I just wanted to start off with.
Can you talk to that? What kind of wisdom? What do you mean?
So, you know, for me, someone who's such an icon of wisdom, and I think an icon for the whole world, is really Madiba. You know, I think wisdom is so much about the capacity to not be trapped into seeing things in very narrow ways and opposites and black or white, but it's the ability to be able to take a transcendent perspective. It's quite a spiritual quality. Eldership is a quality which often comes with older age and having lived a life with lots of experiences, where you realize that it's not just about black and white and how life is more messy and complex and vulnerable and uncertain. But that ability to really kind of take a higher ground in terms of not being hooked into some of the ego hooks that we normally get hooked into. And that's kind of relates directly to mindfulness, because mindfulness, there's so many ways of explaining what it is. But one of the ways is it's an ability, we're building an ability in ourselves to really slow down, pause, take a breath or a few breaths, and see things in a bigger perspective, in a wider perspective, with a wider vista.
So would a nice glass of wine help?
Well, you see, if you watch that TED talk of Brené Brown, you'll see that what she says, and this is part of the problem where we block our connection with our vulnerability in Western society, is that we numb vulnerability. And vulnerability is not a pleasant experience at all. It's terrifying. But to cope with it, we numb it in various ways. And it's not just substances, but substances often are one of the main ways that we reach out for and use as ways to numb ourselves. So if we're numbing ourselves, that's all a question, I guess, of balance and level, you know. But if we are really getting into our drink or whatever else as a tool to cope, which may not be as an adaptive way to rather just practice being present to the truth that I'm really feeling and experiencing, and allow myself to feel vulnerable, allow myself to cry. You know, I was listening and watching earlier today Yishai Ribor, who's to me like the Mashiach of Jewish music in some ways, sing at the Kotel HaMa'arvi, and I just wept. It was just a beautiful experience, and just feeling with the rest of the world at this incredibly powerful and difficult time. So I really think this is an opportunity for us to really connect internally. You know, this is a time where we're going to have a lot more silence in certain ways. We're going to be more we have an opportunity to practice more introspection. And that's a lot of what vulnerability is as well. It's about self-awareness. And in order to have self-awareness, to manage yourself better, you have to have introspection. You have to have an ability to go within. And so much of Judaism, I think, is based on that in a fundamental way.
Okay, so I brought up the wines for a very specific reason, because I'm sitting here with a bottle of Cape Jewel Special Wine, which is actually a red. It's a Cabernet Sauvignon. And let me say this, that they're joining us in bringing the kosher wines to the South African market. They've recently launched the brand at one of the conferences recently. And in order to assist people with kosher wines, they're offering one of their selection of wines, and their wines are red Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinotage, Shiraz. I've been practicing my French. White, Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc. Kiddush, which is a sweet sacramental red, and grape juice. And they will make a donation to Chabad and the HOD for each purchase. So if you want to buy some wine, and it's got six bottles, for 490 rand a case, 80 rand, 1 rand a bottle. This is a discounted launch price for a limited time only. and was offered at the Miracle Drive, which I was just referring to. It'll be delivered to your door free of, for a nominal fee of 80 Rand or free if you order 4 cases or more. And I'm sure over Pesach you can down much more than 4 cases. A minimum order of 2 cases, that's 12 bottles, a free delivery for 4 or more cases within the Johannesburg or Cape Town area. And as I mentioned, the wines that are available, they have red, white, Kiddush, and grape juice. So this is an opportunity over the next couple of weeks, as I'm sure it can ease the pain of being at home and the kids are driving you nuts. So pull up a chair, take a glass of wine, it can be delivered to you, and you don't have to really worry about much more. Just have a corkscrew to be able to open it.
Can I come here in for a moment in terms of what Jochie was talking about, numbing? The flip side of numbing is savoring. And one of the ways that we can really ground ourselves is through our senses and using savoring potentially through taste, potentially through wine.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
As a way of really recentering, and that when we ground ourselves through our sensory portals, we have a real way of just finding a calm and finding a sense of just home again. And that is a little bit about what mindfulness talks to, is really using our sensory modalities as a way to calm our busy mind.
So can I pose something to you? I suppose it's not really a psychological point of view, but from the point of view, we are mindful of ourselves. We're adults. Some of us are elderly. We're grandparents, etc. But let's talk about the kids for a moment. How do you keep these kids occupied? I mean, they're mindful that their parents all of a sudden are home, accessible. And, it's mommy, daddy, this, that, and the other. And I know the parents are tearing their hair out, but maybe there's a way of making life a bit more fun for the kids to be home besides having to go on and do homework, which the schools are delighting in. It's sending packs of homework to kids and sending emails and making people go online and all sorts of things, which I'm sure this is the furthest thing from the child's mind. And the parents are only praying that they'll send more so they can be more occupied. So how do we get a balance with that, and how do we keep the kids occupied?
So certainly creating a sense of routine and structure is incredibly important for kids, and definitely for anxiety as well. So it's helpful to have some sense of a loose structure to manage the day, whether it be a specific wake-up time, and setting targets and goals through the day of activities one would like to engage with. Again,
like, for example, you get up early and make your bed. Mm-hmm. And when you finish, you can do the washing, the linen, hang it on the line. I mean, you know, kids today are spoiled. Maybe this is an opportunity because the maids also are going to be at home, so you haven't got staff. You really want to get these kids into some sort of a routine. I'm not so sure it should be a loose routine. I think maybe that's the problem.
There is a famous book about make your bed, and really talking about the cornerstone of mental health is to begin by making your bed, actually. That it's a good place to begin.
Is that where make your bed so you can lie in it comes from?
Yeah, probably.
I think that.
Okay, so I have a few ideas. I think that one should make some sort of fun out of the being at home. I mean, just for example, could you not teach kids to, I don't know, sew a button on a shirt, or would you teach them to maybe, would you kind of set up something like a treasure hunt where they can go looking for things, make the chores where there's some money and you can buy something in the shop so you can't have treats unless you've done the chore and you can spend it in the mommy's shop in the, which is some couple of sweets and chocolates. I think could we not make it a little bit more engaging? Because I think kids, teenagers and that thing are going to be occupied with other stuff. The teenagers are on the phone all the time and the kids, but I mean, little kids and they want something more. I think, I remember when we was kids, we had the polio epidemic, and I mean, we found things to do.
No, you spoke to that last week, and I thought that was a really, I mean, that stuck in my head a lot around how that was an opportunity to play outside, and it was really seen in a different light with different eyes to the state of, yes.
I mean, my parents wouldn't let me watch TV at all in that time, you know, during that time. And also, we used to take your books and you had to cook them in the oven to burn the germs so that, you know, before you could read it. So, you know, it was, I don't think you could put an iPad in the oven today, but so it's probably a lot safer. But that was the kind of thing we had to do.
Absolutely. And I think one of the maladies of overscheduled lifestyles and overscheduled children is never really having the opportunity to just be, and even not having opportunities to be bored. And there's enormous creativity in boredom that we rob our children when we busy them with 101 activities. They talk about flow states that come into being when we're in states where there is lack of structure, when we're not rushing. Maybe Yochi, you can talk to a little bit around flow states.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is really an opportunity where there's more fluidity in our normal routine and structure. There's such disruption happening. And I think that we can really capitalize on that to disrupt in positive ways. You know, change is always a very difficult thing, and change involves psychologically a loss. Something's coming to an end, but at the same time, in that process, and the process can't necessarily be, you know, exactly charted. It's different for different people and all sorts of factors that impact on that. But the process and the journey does lead to new opportunities. And I think that we can really find ways of being creative and finding flow in families with our kids in really beautiful ways. You know, I think that this is an opportunity where we can really relook at what family time can be and mean. There are rituals that we can co-create in families that can be beautiful, whether it's singing together, playing music together, reading together, creating together, arts and crafts, gardening, growing food together. You know, there are endless possibilities in a way that we can really explore. And part of mindfulness is about creativity. Mindfulness is about shifting from a reactive position where the fear kicks in, and that limits our ability to think, because when you're in an irrational mode of fear, especially when it escalates, you can't really, it's designed, as Natalie was saying before, to shut the body down. Physiologically, our breathing starts going very quick and very shallow. And if we can really just capitalize on shifting into a more mindful space by opening up possibilities and by just slowing down, taking a few deep breaths. By the way, breath is one of the most powerful resources you can use when you're feeling anxious, because what starts to happen is the breathing gets fast and quick. And if you just very slowly deepen and slow down your breathing, there's an amazing proven technique called 4-7-8, which is that every breath cycle has three phases. The in-breath, holding your breath, and then breathing out. And the 4-7-8 is just that. You breathe in for a count of four. You hold for seven. And the hardest part, you breathe out for eight. But if you close your mouth and you make a tiny hole in the exhalation, it's actually very easy to reach an eight-second exhalation usually. And so that slows down your breathing so much, and is a very powerful tool to help you ground and to allow you to shift out of the fear mode and reactive mode into a more open mode. So mindfulness, there's many different metaphors we can use, but one of the powerful metaphors is getting onto the balcony or becoming more an observer. And that's that transcendent perspective that I was talking about earlier and the eldership aspect. But it's really about learning to see, how else can I see this? I might be seeing this as the end of the world and the worst case scenario, and it's absolute this or that, but what else might be possible? And how else can I frame this? And what other lenses can I use to see this? And what can that open up in terms of possibility for me and for us as a family? So I think that that's a very helpful approach.
Are kids mindful, or is it like a natural reaction? But are kids mindful of their position? Are they able to make the distinction?
Kids are naturally mindful. Hey, yeah. I think that they're born with an inquisitiveness, a curiosity, that kind of beginner's mind.
Right.
And I think that we kind of hammer it out of them when we push them into routines and rush and stop looking at that. If I think of my children in the morning, where they naturally would like to draw a little bit, and then they get curious about something around in their room, and it's me that pushes them to, guys, we have a deadline, stop doing that, we need to kind of focus on getting to school. But actually now gives us opportunity when we take away deadlines to really be curious and investigate the world.
So maybe this whole change in the world is going to see a different kind of schooling, a different kind of, maybe it's going to be a new way of life.
I believe economic structures, models, is so much that we can stand to positively disrupt from this really difficult trauma. And trauma always offers a transformational potential. You know, there's an incredible Jungian model of trauma, which sees it really, it's quite a Kabbalistic model as well, but as a death rebirth opportunity where old things can fall away and where we can really unlock completely new ways of how to be. And I couldn't agree with Natalie more. Children, I mean, I see my children as my teachers. I literally think that we have so much to learn from our children and helping us to reconnect with that child that we all have inside of us, even as adults, but it may be buried quite deep, and to really just let ourselves go a little bit and learn how to be more in the moment and more present and less self-conscious and more trusting and curious and inquisitive. These are the things that if we can explore our landscapes, our mindscapes, this is something that will serve us so powerfully during this time.
So should one be pushing the envelope, so to speak, in trying to create stuff for your kids, or do you think that there's a natural tendency to be creative on their own and do things on their own, or is there somewhere in between? Is the truth somewhere in between that? I'm not sure.
So maybe it's not. Yeah, I think maybe it is somewhere in between that. I think that it's not kind of hours and hours of unrestricted, unmediated time. Mm-hmm. I think kids need to feel your presence. But at the same time, I think that they talk about to be alone in the presence of another. And that means that you're in their presence, but you give them space to explore themselves, not necessarily directing all their play.
Does Satan find work for idle hands, or...?
I know every mother of a toddler always says that when it's quiet, that's when they dread it the most. That's the most dangerous time.
No news is good news. I really think that this is a time where one of the biggest challenges that we really need to come to the table with is balance on so many levels. On the one hand, in terms of how we respond as adults and the decisions that we make, the leadership that we're all being called to exercise individually as in families on all levels. To take care of precaution, so to really take as much precautions as we are told by the experts, but at the same time, to also not get carried away into absolute panic and to kind of balance that. It's a very, very tricky balance. And I think in a similar way with children, you know, it's essential that children have a sense of routine and structure, because otherwise they don't feel safe. So psychologically, that's incredibly fundamental. But at the same time, to balance that with the fluidity and the creativity is so important. And I think that every person, every family has to negotiate where that balance is, you know.
I think in these times, this is very uncertain times for everyone. People, obviously, they might be working at home, or they're taking, you know, leave in order to be at home and not be affected in some way, what I've been told by the company. But at the same time, economically, it's got to be stressful, the fact that, you know, will they be going back to a job? Will there still be, you know, will the companies be in business? We don't know how long this will, I mean, one would imagine that this is going to be resolved somehow, but, you know, it could take longer than where everyone hopes. We hope it'll be really next week, but, you know, it could take a lot longer. And, we have to steel ourselves against the, you know, what could happen. So you've got to balance that with the fact that, you know, this is on your mind, yet you're at home and you're kind of in a forced, well, it's almost like keeping Shabbos every day of the week. You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything.
Yeah.
Do you sit down and pray, or do you, you know, grab a glass of wine, or
I think this is the really difficult challenge of this time. So much is up in the air. There is so much uncertainty. And I think that this is another aspect of mindfulness, which there's a choice. You know, whenever we're confronted with something that's beyond our control, this is something that Viktor Frankl was very big on, but it predated him a long time by the philosopher Nietzsche, who said a man with a why can withstand any how, if there's purpose, if there's meaning. And the thing is that we have the ability the choice to make meaning. We have that possibility. It's not always easy, and certainly not at times like this, but we have that opportunity to create meaning out of our experience. And I think that if we're mindful of that, and if we can learn to practice mindfulness, and I'll say a little bit very briefly on practical ways that people can do that and start with that, then we can move into a more creative possibility and both be able to be grateful for the things that we can, you know, not just focus on the negative the whole time, but to also focus on certain things that we can be grateful for, whatever those may be. There's amazing research around gratitude and how powerful that is to rewire the very entrenched neural networks that are often very fixated on the negative and what can go wrong, and to really be open to be grateful, but also to what possibilities we can open up in that space. Right. And I think that there's a need for rebranding that also is applicable here, which is something that's interesting to think about.
Can you talk to the rebranding? What do you mean by rebranding?
Okay, we seem to be back. Are you okay?
Are we in the mix? So really, I think that this is an important opportunity and need for people to think of how we can rebrand ourselves, whether it's on a personal branding level, on a business branding level. This is a time where things are changing in incredibly huge ways, and that can look differently to different people. But I think that it's sometimes seductive to get sucked into the negativity and the fear, and there's so much overwhelm, and oh my God, what are we going to do? And the economy's crashing. And if we can take that energy and harness it, channel it in a different way to kind of, you know, work on our faith, work with mindfulness practice to slow down, to ground ourselves, to take a few deep breaths, and just to explore, first off, on a conceptual level even, what other possibilities might there be hidden in this really difficult time? And to look at those, and then to take practical steps to actually explore how that can manifest.
You know, I'm going to take a moment just to talk about Cape Jewel Wines. I mean, they are sponsoring for us. I'd like to give them a bit of a leg up, and I think that it's important, and I've enjoyed while you've been talking, finishing this bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon. I'll move on to the Merlot after the show. But next week we're privileged to have a master winemaker, Francois van Zyl, who's a BSc in Enology Agriculture at Stellenbosch with over 25 years in winemaking. He's the technical side of Cape Jewel Wines. If you want to look at Cape Jewel Wines, go to www.capejewelwines.co.za, and they are going to, for every sale that they make, they're going to give us the HOD and Chabad, the Hebrew of David and Chabad, a donation. So you can buy a case of wine for 490 Rand, or you can have it delivered to your door if you live in Cape Town, which is a Johannesburg area, and you order four more cases. It'll be delivered free. There'll be a slight charge if you order less. The ones that are available are reds, and it's Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinotage, and Shiraz, and in white, Chardonnay and Chenin Blanc, Kiddush Sweet Sacramental Red, great juice. I can recommend the Cabernet Sauvignon. By next week, I'll have gone through all of them, and I'll be able to make a different recommendation. But at the moment, I'm recommending that if you're sitting at home, maybe just a glass in the evening, and don't go overboard. Just have a couple of sips, and I'm sure it will help pass the time. I'm talking to Jochie Ress and Natalie Solomon. Unfortunately, we lost the connection with the Rabbi Daniel Brody. We're going to talk about davening at home, and we'll have another opportunity. But unfortunately, Natalie and Jochie, we're running out of time as usual. And Jochie, do you want to just give us a bit of background to yourself, give yourself a punt, people want to get hold of you, the rest of it?
Well, I guess just to say at this point, I think the biggest need, and I want to kind of, from an aspect of humanity and just the gesture to say, I think is the support for people. And I really want to just say that I'm going to be offering, I'm very happy to offer greatly reduced rates for, individual therapy sessions, according to what people can manage. I really think that this is, it will be Zoom sessions, Skype sessions, or WhatsApp call, video call. They slightly.
No house calls at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, you know, when I was speaking about rebranding and redefining how do we see ourselves and our role and how else can we operate, that's what I've had to look at because of this whole thing. And to move my practice to easier to move the private practice than the corporate work, although it is possible with Zoom technology and things like that these days, even that and the training. But I've had to look at how I move that into a virtual platform. And it is different to face-to-face, but it is still actually, it takes a bit of getting used to on both sides, but it actually works well, you know, and you can still see the person and you have all the cues, the non-verbal cues and facial expressions and tone of voice. It's more, you know, a video platform is much more effective, obviously, than just the audio call. But so that's just something that I wanted to offer, really, and put that out there. I think this is really a time where we can be mindful of how we can each support each other. I think it's so important in our country. We're in such a precarious stage of this whole thing now. And it's a critical point where I think we really need to go out and think, how can I support? Can I support other people financially if I have the means? Can I support other people on an educational level to help educate if I have those means? I have an incredible friend, Mindy Groman. I want to make a shout out to him and his incredible work with Cadena, which is an organization that's doing a lot of work in getting support supplies out to people who really need it in our communities, who disadvantaged education efforts. And I really think that's one avenue that you can look at supporting if anyone feels called to. But this is really a time where we really need to come to the party with our humanity and big-heartedness. And so
how do they get hold of you?
So to get hold of me, there's a website. My website's called Attuned U, the letter U. So it's A-T-T-U-N-E-E-D-U, the word attuned in passive, A-T-T-U-N for Nelson, E-D, the letter U, .com. That's my website. Otherwise, my phone number, I'm very happy to give out. It's 083-5077-982.
Great. And Natalie, just give us a little bit about yourself and then we'll do some final words on the topic, but tell us what you're doing and what you have been doing the show. And besides the fact that you work for me full time,
what are the other things that I do? So I'm learning to rebrand myself as a parent. Learning about my skills as a teacher, which need a lot of attunement. It's really brought a whole new understanding and real value to what our teachers do. As my children are kind of getting stuck into some of their work, and really become great negotiators with me. I have such appreciation for what their teachers do on a daily basis. Absolutely. I'm also learning to kind of challenge my rigidity of thought and manage some of my fear. And I know that in these times, a sign of resilience is finding psychological flexibility, which is not a natural friend of fear, because the natural friend of fear is rigid thought patterns. But that's something I'm working on. Just kind of finding the joy in not rushing, in wearing pajamas. Just having a meal for lunch together, which is something that we never do.
Sum up in three lines your advice for people out there at home looking after kids.
So I think it's in part shifting focus, finding a way to find the gratitude, to reconnect and to find joy in being together. And then also focusing on, and focusing on self-care as well during this time so that we can be available and present for our children. But really,
Yochi, what do you say?
Absolutely. I just wanted to add, one thing that I think is so important from an aspect of mindfulness, which I didn't yet bring in, is our energy investment. Mindfulness also allows us to become more aware of what we choose to put our energy into. And I think this is critical as individuals to manage the overwhelm, the social media. We've got to find ways of making it what we need in terms of keeping abreast with important developments, etc., but not overwhelming ourselves and thereby overwhelming our kids and family homes as well. So I think that it's so important to also choose to empower ourselves with choice in terms of how we invest our energy. I think that's critical. And I just want to say on the practical note, a very final, 20-second point, just to say that there's an incredible app that people can use. It's called Headspace. One word. It's by a guy called Andy Puddicombe. He also has an incredible 10-minute TED talk called All It Takes Is 10 Mindful Minutes. Wonderful video to watch if you want. But his app, Headspace, there's a free version. There's also a paid version. But even the free version is very, very helpful to start helping you to learn how to slow down, how to monitor your thoughts more, how to get onto the balcony and become more observer of your operating system, literally. And that is so empowering and a really powerful tool, as well as journaling. Journaling is another way that you can become more aware. It's so powerful to just journal, write your thoughts down, write. It's incredible how it provides a relief, a way for you to express what you're feeling and an opportunity to monitor your thoughts, to check that your thoughts don't get carried away. You know, the mind has a mind of its own. And I think that it's a very, very powerful mindfulness tool. Mindfulness really is it's not about controlling what we think. We can't control what thoughts pop in our minds, but we can control how we manage the thoughts that pop in our mind. And that's, I think, really the key.
We have to leave it there. And thank you both. That's Yochi Rees, Dr. Natalie Solomon, both clinical psychologists practicing in Johannesburg. Unfortunately, we lost Rabbi Daniel Brody. But to make up for it, if you go to Cape Jewel Wines.co.za and have a look what they've got. And, you know, you're supporting at the same time Chabad and HIV. And thank you for listening and stay safe. Look after your kids and thank you and good night.